food quarter and an entertainment space as well, and street dressing. So I think if I just mention about the marketing, what we've found interesting is the impact of the scheme is starting to bear fruit now, and the marketing is one of the most visual things you can see, in the sense that the new banners and are now up and installed. But the branding that was developed with the traders was also used to be used on social media and a wide range of in a wide range of mediums and ways. And what we are benefiting from now is people like the BID that are actually using our branding to promote the market, to promote Loughborough. So that's been a nice side of it. And it's also worth noting that we recently had a posting online of a little video that was posted by Luke Kavanagh speaking about his fish stall. That was posted on the 30th of May, and within 2 weeks that reached over 9,000 people. We've still got a lot of challenges ahead, and the report obviously takes you through some of those. The main one being the improvement of the market electrics, but we are in the final stages of the market layout, and then once that is actually implemented, that will help us even further in terms of development of the market. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I have two questions. The first one, Sylvia, and I'm more less embarrassed to ask it because I know what you're going to say, but I think it's important to put it on record. I know that sort of food quarters, food areas are now very fashionable, and I'm very happy to see them in Loughborough. And the most amazing food is salt. But I just want to be assured, you know, it is in the open, it is done in a particular way, that we are quite sure that the environmental safety processes have been put in place.
Yes, obviously any new trader or trader wishing to sell food or make food on the market, we have a standard process that involves working with Environment Health, so all checks are made in advance.
And as they're trading, are they inspected on a regular basis, or do you just wait for someone to say, oh, wasn't very happy with that store, it didn't look very clean?
I think if we've got any concerns at all, we would be the first to tackle that.
Yes.
Please be assured, my officers have done that in the past, so they have reported and supervised and addressed those sort of problems. So I think we'd be happy to continue in that way.
Thank you. And my second question is, and I know it's a question that affects all towns, even big cities now, the number of empty shops in Loughborough at the moment is really quite distressing, particularly when you see places like Greenwoods have gone, Burton's, Dorothy Perkins. I mean, people who have been there for as long as I've lived in the Loughborough area, and that's 4 years and a go to think about. Do we have a strategy in place? How we have plans? What do we do about the empty shops?
It is an ongoing and difficult problem, isn't it? And part of the review of the market was to help open up gaps in the marketplace so we weren't blocking out all of the shops. So that was one of the strategies. To increase the footfall on market days does in fact help all our businesses as well. And we do know that the shops do quite often do their main offers on Thursdays when they've got that yes. kind of increased footfall. We're one of the few actual market towns that the footfall of the market still influences the numbers of people coming into town. But what I would say is that we work very closely with the BID in promotion of the town, and basically our remit very much and the BID is to generate footfall and to bring footfall in the town. I just quoted some of the events that have been happening. My team worked very closely with the BID in supporting them to do their events, as well as putting on some of our own events. And we had over 6 last year that brought in over 20,000 people to those particular events. The key is in the actual marketing approach to make sure that we're not just it's not just the regular suspects, but we're actually bringing people from outside the town. One of the strategies that we worked with a BID is a year-long promotion through like an events brochure. So instead of just piecemeal promoting one event to the other, is to look at an annual programme, getting that out, but making sure that it's not just promoting things in Loughborough, but it's important supporting things in the Charmwood area. Because obviously people don't, you know, people are interested in being attracted to things. So if we're attracted to someone in Charmwood, they might come to Loughborough as well. Equally, if we're attracting people to Loughborough, they might come to Charmwood. So there are a lot of strands of work that are going on that we would hope would keep Loughborough buoyant in attracting people to
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Councillor Christine Harris.
A big question, Sylvia. I think brand Loughborough, you know, this is what we're looking at. And recently Loughborough University has now been given the fourth place again in the list of universities. We mustn't forget that. I know there's a lot of bad things about Loughborough with the university. I've worked there, I was a student there, I love it. That's part of my Loughborough, and we mustn't forget any of that, whatever we say as councillors. And therefore, because we have this link, which is very, very strong in my opinion, we have to make the use of it. And remember that we are what we are in the middle of the triangle of Leicester, Nottingham and Derby, big university towns. And we know, because of the cost of sending students to university, people will go to local universities. And therefore, if they live in Leicester, but Loughborough has got a higher listing, maybe they will send their kids there. And I'm going back to brand Loughborough. And as I say, this is a big question. We were talking, and Sandy was talking about Sharps. That is a national problem. You know, that is something bigger than we have got as well. And the word that you used, Sylvia, was buoyant. And I think maybe how do we raise that buoyancy? Remember that we are fighting the biggest enemy, which is the blooming computers, this lark. You know, I go onto Amazon, that's it. They don't, I have to say, I don't drop a shop. So it's easy to go on the internet. Christy, there you go. How can we, as brand Loughborough, lift the buoyancy, how Loughborough is seen, and how can we take that listing from the university and say to the, even in the, I've got no regrets about this, I would say to students from Leicester, Loughborough, Leicester, Nottingham, Derby, come to Loughborough, you know, because it's a better university. Their parents will come, and all of this will happen. How can we get that sort of image? Yes, that's a big question. I'm sorry. I know, but can you see what I'm trying to? I've never been on the big committees or anything, but I think that there is a big link that we could perhaps use.
Yeah, there are lots of initiatives of how we work with the university on the bid, but the best advocacy is from students themselves. So what we're trying to do is to get the students to sell Loughborough and the students to come, especially to the market as an example. There was a recent video just posted by a student who independently, I think it was inspired by Lou Fishman's video, where he actually did a comparison with Sainsbury's and Loughborough Market. It's a very, very nice video, and it was a price comparison, and it was also about the experience. And that said it all to me, in the sense that quite independently that student was doing that. So if we can get the students to advocate, students will follow and come. That's one of the strategies. But equally, things like Freshers Day, we work with a bid on a map that goes up to the students on Freshers Day, but they pull out a street map, it tells them where everything is, where they can find things, tells them about the market. Very, very handy little piece of print. But it's using every opportunity we can to actually continue to engage on whatever level, whether it's at a strategic level or directly with the students. But it obviously it's not just pertaining to my services, there's quite a lot of engagement that goes right across the council and the university.
Sorry. Can I just add to that from what Councillor Harris was saying? You know, when you go in Europe to towns, and there'll be students, not just students, there'll be quite famous musicians playing in all of these places, because they like to play to the punters on the street. You know, how can we inspire that and bring it into life?
Well, the students are actually taking over the Christmas lights switch on at 5 o'clock. They're providing all the entertainment. This first year we've kind of extended it from 5 to 7, where they've been given that slot. They've asked for that, and they will be doing that. For years, they do perform on a different event, so we have a number of different bands that come from the university. And they're interested in doing more activity on the parks as well. So there are a number of projects that are in development at the moment. And an evening street market is one of them as well, in October for the students. It's an ongoing...
yeah, it's a big question. But we need to tap into that, yes. All of our relationships that we've got going.
Okay, thanks for that. Did Councillor Bolton have a question?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. A couple of questions, please. The first one is really referring back to what Councillor Forrest was talking about. Do we know how many empty shops there are currently in the town centre?
We monitor it with the bid on a monthly basis. What we do know, I can't remember the exact figure, but we are actually under the national average.
Right.
And there are different reports that come out. I think it was around 9%. But I will be able to clarify rather than do that.
Sure.
We can clarify that, if that's okay. I can give you the national average as well as how the compares, but we have less vacant spaces,
okay,
than the lockdown.
My second question, so I think I said there were two. In December last year, and I've just been searching for it and I can't find it, in December last year there was a really excellent report that was produced, I think it was through the government, on regenerating town centres. I guess, Sylvia, that you're probably familiar with that. And I just wonder to what extent the work that we're putting in Loughborough has actually taken account of some of the very good suggestions in that report.
Yes, obviously those sort of reports are very good, and we have put an application into the High Street Fund, which we're still waiting to hear from. The only problem that we have is that the actual problems of the application form is weighted, so if you're if you've got a lot of vacant units, you would score more points, and if you've got a lot of deprivation, you score higher. So towns that were actually in greater need tend to score higher.
Mm-hmm.
And we were told that from the onset, but I think we're still waiting to hear that a lot of the ideas of development, obviously funding like that would help to unlock.
Councillor Tillotson.
Yeah, thank you. A fairly simple question, I think, Sylvia. Listening to you talk about what you're doing to promote the town, the students, it occurs to me that there are many more young people in and around Loughborough who are not students, and that we need to think about ways of promoting Loughborough to them to use their hometown, really, perhaps rather than going into Leicester or Nottingham.
Agree. I mean, we have to appeal to every demographic, and what we're trying to do is have initiatives that will actually work for the different demographics. When we do marketing, we do customer segmentation. So when we do surveys, we break them up into different age groups, and so when we're reviewing those results, we're not just reviewing them from, well, put everything in one survey and take the general results. We can say we want to kind of delve into that, maybe the 16 to 24 year old age, and kind of do some research on that. And that's part of our commitment to customer service excellence. It's the same with our leisure centres and the different services that we do. We make sure that we not just look at the kind of overall results, that we can actually, you know, kind of take notice of particular age groups, or not just age groups, people who are interested in a particular type of activity, and we use that information whenever we can.
Yeah, no, I was going to talk about the Future High Streets Fund because I'm a member of the town team by Leicestershire County Council, but Sylvia's already mentioned it.
Thanks for that. Any further questions? Thank you very much.
So I think we've touched on the festive lights. The other part of the project was the update on the town centre dress and festive light project. We were delighted in, because we have to go through a tendering exercise, we're absolutely delighted that the company did win, that was to us was the most interesting, because it was about reflecting our own heritage back to us in these rather spectacular lights. The street dressing with the new market banners is the second phase of that, and what I was particularly pleased with is that the bid have also invested into infrastructure for the town centre by tackling the high street, which was not included in our scheme because our monies was just to replace the existing scheme, so that the actual bid invested into the high street with new patineries and new festive lights for 2019 will be a nice addition. We did have some problems with the electrics again. We hope to be able to draw down some LEP funding to support the development of electrics in the markets, but we have got some money left in that particular scheme to improve the electrics for our lighting scheme. I think if there's only a question, I think that's all I'm saying.
Okay.
The Carillon Tower, we did a major conservation programme for Carillon. We're pleased that obviously it was delivered on time and roughly to budget. We didn't have the architectural fee within the capital programme, so that was delivered through our own budgets and an underspend in my area. But the project work included work on the bronze memorial plaques, the repairs to the copper roof, the refurbishment of the clavier and bells infrastructure, and repairs to all the wooden doors, and work in the bell chamber. And I think one of the most noticeable things was the repairs to the windows, the frames and the glazing, so you can actually see through the Carillon there, where they all used to be built boarded up and we had no ventilation. I'm pleased to say that based on the success of that project, we did have to empty the museum that occupies the Carillon Tower, and the conservation project inspired them to work towards the HLF bid. So I've put a little bit in the paper kind of outlining the progress on that. The main change I'd like to draw your attention to is that the Carillon, when the museum opens again, hopefully with a successful bid, will tell the story of the Carillon and its bells, as well as displaying the World War One and World War Two exhibits. And the ground floor we would use more for audio visuals, so addressing the access problems, so people can hear the story of maybe people who were involved in building the Carillon in the first place, and be able to see videos as well. I think that working with the Carillon War Memorial Trust, we've got an open day at the end of January, which is linked to the Armed Forces Day, and there'll be people there to be able to talk more about the project, and at this stage it's very much about audience development and engaging people, because it's about widening the audience to carry on with the peer.
Any questions?
Sorry, what you've just been saying, is there a sort of a target date where it's all finished and ready and rolling?
There is a target date, because they wish to put the application in the next few months.
Right.
Because it's the cattle they're going for is under 100,000, we expect to eat here within 2 months.
Mm.
There has been a change, because it's not called the Heritage Lottery Fund in any way. Now it's changed. So although an application was in, and we've been appointed someone from the grant to kind of oversee our project. We've had to actually apply again, because they've changed the guidelines. So there has been a slight delay, but the aim is hopefully within the next 4 months we should know how we got on.
Just thank you, Mr. Chairman, directly. Yes, I'm very pleased that the Carillon Tower is being seen as a building in its own right.
Yeah.
We don't have many outstanding buildings in Loughborough, and the Carillon Tower is one of them. And architecturally, just on its own, it is an absolutely wonderful building. Mm-hmm. And the structure, the framework of the bells is absolutely amazing. And Councillor Harris has been talking about music, and I honestly believe in the future we should perhaps look to doing more Carillon concerts. It would be very specialised, but
you know, an event in the park with the Carillion, I think it would be lovely, and encouraging people just to go in and go round the building just to look at this really outstanding building we've got in the middle of Loughborough. Thank you.
Can I just respond to that? I'm really pleased you said about the architecture, because we're actually using the blueprint of the building, which is a wonderful Prussian blue blueprint, to actually generate interest in future donations and the project itself, and it will have some information on each floor.
Good.
Of what's intended to be in there.
Would it be possible to invite members at an appropriate time, either to one of the already arranged open days or at a specific open day? I've never been in it, and I guess a lot of members haven't.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. I mean, at the moment, the museum's doors are actually locked because obviously they're empty at the moment, and we've got all the old cases in, but we can take anyone up the tower, and like I said, it's on the 29th. Is that the Saturday, the 29th of June? We will be having an open day in the afternoon. We can send the details of that. Right.
Any other questions? The opportunity to ask yourself your question. I believe we're also now beginning to focus on two big things. One, the current tower, 100 years, and the market, 800 years. So that work is now beginning to be thought about, planned.
And not only thought about, there's been quite a lot of meetings for both of those. 2021 sees the 800th anniversary of the market, and it's looking about sustainability of the market. There is a massive interest from the community, and there's a heritage group that are actually looking at developing briefs for their area of interest. So a lot of work already progressed on that, but we would be treating it like a major project, like we did with World War One commemorations, using that as our kind of pilot project of how you can engage schools and community in delivering that event. And obviously the improvements to the Carillon are also thinking about how we work towards 2023, which will see the anniversary of the Carillon Tower, 100 years celebration.
Thanks. On the horizon, so we have this quality. Thank you very much.
Julie Robinson, Head of Neighbourhood Services, and Tim McCabe, Community Safety Manager. Our bits of report are on page 23 through to the top of 26. Tim's going to present them. I propose that we just do all three together and just take questions at the end.
Good evening, good evening, Chair. Yes, the report, as Julie says, focus on three key areas I was asked to update the committee on. That is the People Zone, Operation Lion Heart, which many of you may have heard about locally, and also some of the positive action that's being taken in the town centre regarding civil injunctions. Start with People Zone first of all, on page 23. This is an initiative that commenced back in August 2018 in collaboration with the Office of the Police Crime Commissioner. Decree that's Strategic Partnership Board. The concept is based upon an integrated neighbourhood management team working across both statutory and non-statutory partners, but also engaging with the community. It went live for us in January 2019, and the actual location that was decreed was the Belt Foundry Estate, actually in Loughborough East. And again, as I say, the vision is being created for that multi-agency team to create a safer and stronger community actually within that estate. Discussions why that was location was actually chosen was based upon a data set looking at the indices of multiple deprivation, It's a lower super output area and it forms a hierarchical structure from number 1 to 33,500 nationally, number 1 being the worst, 33,500. Low super output area, you're probably one of the best in the country. And again, on many factors such as crime, that location features in the top 1% nationally. I think it's 49th in respect of crime data. And again, there's lots of issues about employment rates and deprivation per se, health issues. You look at the not just the crime and ASP, but the agencies' demand profile. A lot of agencies are working in that location. So it's a low super property that was chosen. Belfound Estates is made up of approximately 1,500 houses, residents, households. And we look to extend it ever so slightly because professional judgment told us that, you know, for inclusivity, some of the elements that we probably need to broaden outside the estate, otherwise, you know, we didn't want to restrict where we actually were. An operation model was created that is on two focused areas. It's focused on people, so people and place. The people group is chaired by the police sergeant for that locality, and that meeting looks at known offenders, prolific persistent offenders, which Loughborough unfortunately attracts quite a few. And also then looks at an element of enforcement around them, but we're also very keen that the locational has a number of adults at risk and youths at risk. We know that we have curfew and going in that location. We know there's lots of issues regarding drugs, county lines, etc. So that group, multi-agency team, looked at enforcement predominantly. We then move across to a place subgroup. Again, that one is chaired by the neighbourhood development officer, Louise Chance, or Middleton, as she is now, I forget she's married. And again, that's made up of partner agencies, community members. They come together, they identify issues that, again, cross-fertilisation across the people, because again, it might be a people-led issue. Needless to say, one of the key issues that location is drugs. Drugs has come up as a prominent factor. And again, as you say, beneath that, we have the partners and communities together. So what the belief is that the communities, the partners and communities together meeting will again filter up, feed into both people and place. And again, we can take a positive action, so elevate the drugs, which we'll link into Lionheart shortly. One of the key things that we realised also as a CSP that we needed to take some positive action regarding the drugs. So in April of this year, we have written, presented and delivered on a drug strategy. I think we're the only CSP nationally to do it. But the early identification, building recovery and the safer community elements are the three themes that we're trying to do. In respect to the actual People's Zone itself, Loughborough University have now been appointed to create an evaluation model, which their professor, just gone off to my head, Alan Smith, who we all know from HMOs, etc., is writing the strategy, and again, we're meeting with him next week. There's three other people's zones. We are one of three people's zones, one in Colville, one in New Parks. The progress that we've already made in 6 months has led the PCC to commission outside consultants called Evolution Process, and their job is to create a targeted model that suits all. Out of all three, they've now chosen the Belfoundry model built around people and place. So I'm really pleased that within 6 months we've had such an impact through the structure that they are now coming in and presenting to the PCC that other partnerships should start to model on the people and place locality. Lots I could say about it, but that's the People's Zone update to date. It links into the next update, which is around Operation Lionheart. Operation Lionheart, again, as many people aware, is an enforcement initiative predominantly led by Leicestershire Police, but supported by other agencies. Again, part of the consultation process told us that drugs was a significant issue in Charnwood, predominantly in Loughborough. So Lionheart has been in situation for several months, focused upon looking at drug enforcement, looking at the exploitation of adults at risk, and again looking at the youths at risk, be it through county lines or be it through urban street gangs. Again, it's had quite a significant social impact in some elements. Phase one of the enforcement commenced in April 2019, and the two key locations that Leicestershire Police put the covert and overt operation in was Leicester City Centre and Charnwood, Silverby, Loughborough itself. So they were the two focused locations across the area. To date, we have had 48 warrants executed within Charnwood, predominantly most of them again in Loughborough, under the Misuse of Drugs Act. And as such, we have 59 arrests that have been made. The tactics that we use are quite covert. So again, a lot of the evidence was already found in advance because they've done controlled purchases from these individuals. CPS had given charging decisions, so as they were arrested, they were straight before the court. To some extent, some of them have already pleaded guilty, and you will see in the press that one or two of them are already being given sentences and are serving sentences for those offences. Others are in the pipeline as they work through with the magistrates' courts. We're now into phase two of that, and again, the big key thing is what happens after the enforcement moves through. This is all about community reassurance, predominantly around the locations. There's been some positive action taken as part of the cohort that we have, particularly around the urban street gang that works around the Warwick Way estate. Some of those individuals have now faced positive action not only in the criminal courts, but landlord services have now taken positive action in the county courts. And on two occasions, two of the houses that have been involved, we have interim closure orders. Again, quite complex social neighbourhoods, social family, and quite a big impact. But again, we are meeting this Friday to sweep up phase two and see again as a partnership both with the police and the borough and support services like social care, be it adults or youth, about what continuation we do. Because again, there are quite a few issues around Victoria Street as a hotspot, the Browning Road on the Warwick Way estate, and again, the Dog Foundry estate. So I'm pleased to say that, coming back to the people zone, we're in the like location to target these individuals, but again, this is quite a complex process. That moves on then to Loughborough Town Centre, because again, having worked here both in my previous occupation and where I am now, you find that there's a crossover between both situations, be it the drugs. It's not specific to any set ward. Every ward will have its own issues. And Loughborough Town Centre brings its own issues. Again, my update centres predominantly upon the begging aspect of it. And again, that links in a lot of, again, to the drug elements of it and the drug abuse. So it became quite clear to us as a partnership that we were seeing an increase in begging back in 2017. A lot of other localities, other towns were taking enforcement action. We saw a lot of displacement. But then again, you see a lot of copycats when individuals realise that actually through begging they could actually make an element on their drug abuse or actually make significant cash flow. So we took out a civil injunction in December 2017, and by that we had to secure the evidence, present it to a county court judge, and that was targeted as a civil injunction predominantly against three named individuals who were persistently begging in the town centre, being that aggressively, you know, certainly at certain parts of the day. Again, we were given that for 12 months, and we took positive action against the individuals, and through the extension, which was then extended up to December 2019, that injunction is in place. As I say, we've now taken positive action for all breaches. It's a complex world, unfortunately, because again, there are social implications with some of these individuals. But three of them to date have served custodial sentences for the breach of the injunction. The breach is seen as a contempt of court. So every time an individual breaches the injunction, then it's the contempt of court. But we realised, you know, the social issue of it, and again in 2017 we approached the support services of the bridge and other support services and also Leicestershire Police. So we brought in a protocol to manage homelessness and ASB, street-related ASB. So our first approach is always to offer support. So when we identify an individual, we will approach them with housing needs and the bridge and seek to give them the first stage of support. However, if they don't engage with that support and they continue to breach, then we go into a more forced pre-legal action. Again, with some of them, to say they've had custodial sentences. We have again gone back to court because there are a number of other issues. Individuals, we've now just received in June of this year an extension with eight named individuals on that injunction. So we'll share that due to data protection here. But there are eight named individuals who are persistently begging. Again, the plan is to take further enforcement action against them. A bit like what Nicholas said previously about the PSPO, part of what we do is make sure that we do a community consultation because we want to feel that the community are with us in this action. We did our exercise in August 2018, and 97% of those who were actually surveyed turned around and said that they saw it as an issue locally and they supported positive action in respect of the begging. So moving forward, it's a question of the process would be to continue to extend that injunction. It has a 12-month shelf life. Again, that is based upon a threshold of necessity and proportionality. You know, we can't be perceived to be targeting a specific group of people in any location, be them homeless, be them whatever. But that relies upon, as the PSPO does, based upon community intelligence. One of our issues is a lack of reporting. Initially, back in 2017, there was quite a significant uprise in people who were prepared to report the individual people begging, Recently, particularly through the bid, we in the last 6 months have probably had zero people from the bid agencies or other elements reporting it to us. So we are recording the breaches, we are seeing it positively, action taken, but again, we keep pushing back to individuals that if we see it, we need to report it. Because in the first instance, we're looking for that support, because we will go out and offer this individual support. It's only when they disengage or refuse to take the support we actually have to escalate it. And as I say, just to sort of bring that to an end, we do have a PSPO in the town centre, again, specifically relating to education. As Nick has already taken through the PSPO, I don't need to touch on that, other than say that's different from a civil injunction. A civil injunction is targeting towards a known problem individual. The PSPO is about targeting a location, and the control measure in there is targeted towards everybody who's in there. So the PSPO that looks at alcohol consumption and ASB that's in the town centre. That sort of ends my report, but again, so Julie, I'm sure I can take your questions.
Are there any questions on that?
So the arrests, are these for intent to supply or possession?
They're both in respect of that. We have possession with intent to supply, we have possession. You know, there's quite a few different categories allowing their premises to be used for the supply.
Yeah.
So it depends upon each individual case, but you've got cross breadth. There's Class B, which is predominantly cannabis, but again, we have a large selection of these charges for Class A. It seems to be heroin and crack cocaine that we're actually doing.
Mm. And what, since January 19, what's the crime and antisocial behaviour statistics like in the Belfangie estate, for example? Are you noticing a downward trend yet?
I'd say around, say, at the moment, the early indications are the amount that's sort of crossing over two performance years. So as we ended the performance year, I think it's fair to say that crime was up in the locality of Loughborough itself.
Yeah.
And again, that's, as the police have been here, we'll talk about national crime recording standards. The fact that the Home Office restructured the National Crime Recording Standards and hence you saw an uplift. The inspector obviously doesn't come to this meeting, will put that down to a large significant increase in public order offences. Previously they wouldn't have been crimed, but they are now crime because again, to show transparency, the police are governed to make sure that those situations happen. Specifically in respect of the Bell Foundry, I think the key issue for us there remains to be serious acoustic crime. That will be burglary dwelling and that will be theft from local vehicles.
Mm.
I think it's fair to say that we have a new inspector. That individual has arrived. Yeah. I don't know if you've all had contact, but he's certainly a different character from the outgoing inspector, which I'm not leveling anything against that, other than he has a style of policing that, you know, he wants to take the street, the initiatives back and, you know, reclaim some of those elements.
Mm.
So I think at the moment we would say that we were overall as a CSP up by 12.6% crime. But again, it's year on year comparison. I think what we have to look at, what we said to support other scrutiny, is a 3 to 5 year trend. Otherwise, you knee jerk for year for year.
Yeah.
The challenges are still there. Again, as I say, unfortunately, most of that, well, if not all of that serious crime is driven by the drug dependent criminals that we have.
The report also mentions the sex industry.
Yes.
That particular estate is suffering from a cost of prostitution.
There is an issue with sex workers, predominantly, I would say, towards Loughborough East. I've been made aware of an operation that the police have just recently highlighted to me called Operation Grey. When I was given privy to some of the access on that, the issue what you have is, again, is drug-dependent females who are actually utilising or seeking to utilise individuals in payment for sex.
Mm.
So the big issue there for us is a question of what we haven't got is a common prostitute loitering, which is what used to be said, such as a red light district. What you've got is a number of vulnerable females in their own right because they're so dependently craving drugs, they will seek to engage with them. We've took that initiative from the intelligence we've got on that. We've met the Falcon Centre. We've looked at supporting a bid, you know, to make sure that we link in with partners to see what we can do to support the females involved in that. The Falcon Centre taking that forward.
Mm.
They want to create a drop-in centre away from the Falcon Centre itself, because that's got quite a male-orientated location. So, again, we're looking to be upstream, but certainly from what I've seen, what we haven't got, like many city centres, is a red light area, a common prostitute being driven in, working an area, what you've got is residents who live in that locality, drug dependents, they will seek wherever they can to approach males for the necessary payments for that.
Okay, final question. And what predominantly the nationality of these women? Oh, are these white British locals?
White British.
Right, okay.
I was just going to add that the positives are that we are joined up in all of this and we are working with other support agencies and we are supporting bids both from the Borough Council through the Community Grants Programme, through the Community Safety Partnership and the PCC's office to do some outreach drugs work and also some work around support for sex workers. So we're putting all the pieces of the jigsaw together.
Just very quickly, this Operation Lionheart, I think, is working. I spoke to Mark Bott yesterday for a couple of hours. We had a very interesting. But there are issues about what I would call vulnerable adults. It's not about estates. It's on streets, and people live in houses. And I would say that there are vulnerable women around, let's put it like that. And
yeah, I think on that element, I would say we don't use the term vulnerable adults anymore because the Care Act has deemed that to be not an appropriate use of words or language for the individuals. We call them adults at risk. And as you rightly point out, Councillor, there are adults at risk by the situation or the circumstance they find themselves in. So if you rightly point out, the Joint Action Group that is multi-agency chaired every 4 weeks, then sitting with the People's Zone and that, we look for the adults at risk and the youths at risk because the two, you know, hand in hand in many ways. And those situations then are making sure the referrals to adult social care, they come and sit, we have a multi-agency discussion and look at how you can put in place, you know, some sort of control, which probably we have as a partnership, as these people are living generally chaotic and complex lives. And, you know, they, as much as you offer support, their dependency is so high. But yes, it is, you know, we are not lost in the fact that, you know, we have adults at risk in this location and youths at risk, which is why it's really important from a safeguarding perspective that, again, as training we've given recently to elected members, of which some of you were there, it's important that, you know, early identification is key. And I'd always encourage people referring into us so we can make a genuine assessment.
And, Chair, it's not just nationalities, nationalities, leave it, and sexes. And I think, you know, that's part of it. And we have to, and I'm a Leamington councillor, but I know it happens in other parts.
Sure.
I just wondered what prevention work has been done then with the vulnerable children and adults that we know are at risk from the counter-line gangs?
Okay, we put in place, obviously there's been lots of, you know, supporting Leicestershire families, you may have heard, they've restructured now, and they work with the offending service, a big restructure. But in August of last year, we created a youth jack. So such were the issues around the volume that we were dealing with, that, you know, in a 2-hour joint action group, you know, the borough is so big, you know, so you've not just got Loughborough, you've got the south of the borough, etc. You know, we were all probably, you know, it's a huge locality, as you all know. Then we decided that to manage the risk and preventative work, we would create a specific youth jag, which I chair.
Yeah.
So that youth jag will sit in here every 4 weeks. We originally started with a cohort of individuals where we looked to RAG assess them, from a red, amber, green. There was in excess of 44 children on that situation who were either engaged with antisocial behaviour or engaged in criminal activity. We meet in that multi-agency with adult social, youth, children's social care, sorry, inclusion partnerships, both South and locally here. When you look at ACE, I don't know if you're all aware of that term, but the adverse childhood experiences, many of these have them, and many of them are excluded from mainstream education. And in that situation we sit, and at the moment we have a cohort of 12 that we've deemed to be high risk. So in that high risk situation, we look at 3 counts of risk of reoffending, which they're high risk of harm to themselves and risk of harm to others. So once that threshold's met in this forum, we then start to put in place, you know, elements of work. Again, a lot of those families you'll find will be siblings, they'll be secondary victims, and some of those situations of late we've had to remove the children from the home. So we're always looking for early identification. As I say, in that cohort, as I say, 30 to 40 to 50, will be people on a different scale of offending. So we're looking to risk manage, deter offending, but then also be upstream at the other spectrum, particularly in the Think Family programme, where we look at the holistic approach. But again, as I say, key to that table is a lot of the education. I know that's, you know, we've discussed past, that will have a lot of the intelligence of what they're doing during the daytime. As I say, sadly, as I say, when you look at the adverse childhood experiences, many of these are now starting to feature. You know, it's no surprise at this level. But we offer that because, again, it's really important. You say these are people. You know, we need to deal with people with complex issues. But we also need to make sure that there's a robust management plan wrapped around them. But as I say, they're detailed, very passionate meetings, as you can imagine. And, yeah, it's a very complex world.
Okay. Thank you. Councillor Brennan.
Hi. I wonder if I could ask what your perception, or perhaps what the evidence is, of why there is an increase in drug abuse within these areas. Is it purely to do with the increase in supply through the county lines? Are there other social factors? You mentioned that you're identifying more children with their first childhood experiences. Are there more children having those experiences, and is that contributing?
I guess it's yes to all of them. I think, you know, when you ultimately sit down and you deep dive and you map into the complex nature of some of these families, you know, many of them are third generation unemployed, many of them are living in really deprived situations. Not all of them, because again, there are families, you know, where children decide for whatever reason to make bad choices, so, you know, it's not a class specific thing. But as you say, it really is everything that you pointed out there. I'd probably turn around and say yes. Loughborough, for some reason, is targeted, like many towns now, from county lines. So, you know, we will know that we've had Sheffield, Nottingham, London, Leicester City. You will target this location and, again, utilise some of the children elements of it. But then, at the same time, we've got county lines, but we have an urban street gang, and they are predominantly aged between 13 up to 21 years of age. I use that term because they've been identified as that. Leicestershire Police have identified that they are an urban street gang based upon that. So, you know, you've got a locality-based drug dealing gang.
And this is the Warwick Way.
Yeah. And then you've also got county lines issues. And again, as you say, is unfortunately, those business opportunities lead themselves here. But again, you know, there's many probably complex, for me not to go into in this forum, social issues, political issues that really, you know, have impacted. And as you say, yeah, we as a community safety partnership are aware and got a lot of challenges on.
And do you think that those social issues have increased independently of the increase in supply?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at many things, isn't it? You know, it's all well documented. There's many situations that are impacting upon towns and cities. And, you know, then we look at the social impact. And, you know, that could be several different factors. And again, as you say, I think, you know, there's an element of all of that that will have a play. So, like you said, I'd say, you know, it really is. I could sit and talk for hours. I've lived and breathed it so much. But yeah, we've got an issue.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks for that. We're looking at times going on, so maybe a final question.
Yeah, just to paint a different picture, that isn't all bad luck raised. No, this is but on a realistic note, I've lived there all my life. A lot of it isn't homegrown, if you know what I mean. A lot of it is lots of people, because it's sort of social housing, a lot of social housing on the Peel Drive estate. It's all social housing majority. If you trace it back, people have only been there 2 or 3 or 4 years, and they've actually been imported in. This issue has been imported in. And residents who live in the houses around Peel Drive estate are quite frustrated, actually, with the council allowing this to occur, knowing the issues that it brings with it, but also knowing the advantages that other people take of the troubles there. But I think as councillors, but as a council, we've got to take responsibility. If we put in somebody who's come out of rehab or come out of an issue or domestic violence into an estate such as that, because that's the only housing that's available, then, you know, where's our duty of, you know, our care responsibility on our duty of care to that person? Because we know Peel Drive is bad, it gets targeted by these drug gangs. We know it's not the best place to live if you've got drug dependency. But yet, sometimes that may be the only housing that we've got available, and we tend to put them in there. And you can see that, because if you trace that from 1980s, early 80s, when these flats were built, to now, you can see the trend of the tenants that we're putting in there as a council. So we have to take responsibility as well. We can't be one way, can't just be the residents' fault. We've got to take responsibility of who we put in there and how we house these people. And I'm glad I came to this meeting because I'm the new chair of the new committee of community neighbourhoods, and I think this is one of the challenges that we're going to face, is that actually where's the duty of care to not just Peel Drive but everywhere, if we're putting vulnerable people into vulnerable situations, where's the duty of care as a council of putting those people in the first place as well? And we've got social housing all over the borough, and maybe it's time when we revisit that and say actually we know there's an issue there, we can't put somebody who's come straight out of rehab or straight out of prison into that kind of community. Okay, cheers, thank you.
Very, very final thing. We have got a lot of properties owned by landlords. I'm shocked about the number that I'm finding out. I think that has suddenly emerged as an issue, and I think we'll leave it open.
Just explain that section. Thank you very much.
One more. Yeah, we've just got the one paper, haven't we? Yeah,
I think
we've got the one paper. Yeah,
we shouldn't be too far beyond that.
Okay, thank you. Tom Matt Bradford, head of cleansing and open spaces. For those of you haven't met before, and just briefly, like to talk to you about where we are with burial provision and the new cemetery. As some of you are new members, I'll probably do a very quick recap of where we're at really. So in October last year, the Cabinet decided on the location for a new cemetery for the town. That is at the rear of Nampanton Road Sports Ground on agricultural fields at the moment. And since October, my team have been working on getting all of the necessary information, paperwork, studies together to submit a planning application in order to progress the project really. So we're at a stage now where we're ready to submit the planning probably next month. We've had some pre-application advice from Highways and the Environment Agency, who regulate these sort of developments, and that's been pretty encouraging so far. So no real issues at this stage, and as I say, we're just in the process of preparing all the different studies and things that we have to do. Those are listed on page 27 and 20 and 28. So the current situation is that we'll be in for planning over the summer, hopefully next month, and then the tendering process or procurement process will begin. Which we'll select the contractor that we're going to use to develop the cemetery, and then we're hoping that the construction on the site will commence next financial year 2020-2021, and that will give us hopefully plenty of time before our existing provision runs out really. So I know a lot of you have had regular briefings on this before. We've got a few new members, so I'm happy to take any questions that people may have of any of that.
Just a quick one, I think you're sort of to the chair on timing. So we've got about 2 years, maybe 18 months left in the old cemetery space wise, give or take.
Yeah, we were at sort of 4.5 years in the October report, so about 4 years.
4 years.
Existing provision, obviously that is dependent on usage, taking average annual burial figures. We think we've got about 4 years left and I'm hopeful that the new site will be operational well before the time that the existing provision runs out, and all indications are at this stage that that will be the case.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, it's a plea really. In the past 12 months I've been to 6 funerals at 5 different cemeteries, and it's really, I've never been to so many in such a short space of time, and it's really drawn my attention to how very different cemeteries are and how attractive some of them are and how very unattractive others are. And so it's a plea really when we're developing this cemetery for, you know, a significant period of time that we make it an attractive place to be, because I think it will make a big difference to people who find themselves having to go there.
Certainly, just to answer that point, we're quite keen for it to be a really nice place for people to go and visit. We've got an excellent location, it's a really lovely place already, and we want to enhance that through the work that we're doing, and I'm quite keen for the new site to obtain a green flag status so that it is there, it's recognised for its design and its horticultural maintenance there. So absolutely, I've been doing some visits as well to look and see what other people are doing, and we want it to be a first class facility that people are proud of, so hopefully we'll achieve that.
Thanks for that. Any further questions in terms of the brain?
So, it was mentioned before, I think that Sylvia Wright mentioned that there were two officers who looked after the current cemetery.
Yeah, I mentioned
you it. Mentioned it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's all right. You're both sitting over there. And I just wanted to know how it will be managed, how that will be continued, that work to obviously maintain the current cemetery, and whether there'll be a lot of increased costs involved with having the two locations.
Yes, there will be increased costs to having two locations, so we'll have two sites there, and there'll be a variation to our management of open spaces contracts. Mm. We've got the Loughborough Cemetery at the moment is split into the old cemetery and the new cemetery. We've got 21 closed churchyards that we look after in parishes and around the borough as well. But there will be an increased cost to that. We also derive income from the cemetery as well for the charges that we levy, and we'll have a look at that as we go forward. The site that we're developing is quite large. It does give us about 250 years capacity, so that is quite significant. But what we're looking to do is develop that in stages, so we'll only develop the stages that we need for the first phase that we need for the first few years. The remainder of the site will be left to agriculture as it is now, so we'll try and manage costs that way, but obviously we will be doing a variation to our contract to include that site in that, and the costs will rise.
Yes, Councillor Smithwick. I know when it was first being discussed, there was a conversation or a suggestion from one of the members that the gravestones would lie flat as opposed to upright. And I just wondered if that's been taken up in any way.
We haven't made any decisions around sort of configurations and layouts and things like that at this particular stage. We're just sort of focusing on the macro details, if you like, and getting through the planning application. I have been to several cemeteries, as I said, as part of the design elements of what we're looking for, and some of them are quite uniform, and they sort of they let a contract by a particular stonemason, and everything is the same, and others have more of an approach, and things are managed via cemetery regulations, but it isn't really something that we've settled on at this stage, so we've got a bit of work to do before.
Thank
you. Councillor Baldwin, I just wondered, my heritage is Italian, and we have some lovely cemeteries in Italy, and I just wondered whether you were looking at best practice abroad as well as in England.
We're not. I'm quite happy to go on a find out.
Sure you will be. Google.
It is something that we can look at as well. But just at the moment, I have to say that the focus has been on practicing this culture.
Okay.
Some final questions now.
Just a very quick question. And of course, the old cemetery, which is close to my heart, my mum and the family are there. That is going to be, I would hope, a heritage site, and that will remain so.
We've recently started a Friends of the Old Cemetery group with a view to increasing that, getting some community participation in there. Our ambition is to make that a green flag site as well, because there are some very interesting heritage elements there. There's some very interesting trees as well. It's quite a nice peaceful site. We've got the old chapel there. There really is a lot of potential there, and we have got some money actually in the existing capital programme to move towards a green flag there. So that's very much in the pipeline.
Okay. No further questions? Right, thank you very much for that. I think the last thing to say is the meeting dates are as published. So the next one is scheduled for the 18th of September. And thank you very much for the state. Like